Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor. And this week's episode, we have Sarah here. Sarah, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, absolutely, Leticia. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Sarah Schaefer. I have been a social worker for 25 years in healthcare, working on in the acute care hospital, 15 years with United Healthcare. So playing both sides of the coin. And, you know, I have lived a life that I like to say is 11 shades of Meredith Grey from Grey's Anatomy. And in writing and starting my company of life coaching and life strategy coaching, focusing on that, because the lifestyle of Meredith Grey is pretty much what we're all living in, you know. And in writing my book, my purpose was to let people know that they're not alone, you know, and the dark and spooky, the crazy thoughts that we all go. In doing the market research and the personal research, it's getting it out that is vital. It's when it sits here and stews and burns and makes everything a rolling dumpster fire up here. And what I do very well is I get women out of their own way. We're standing in the way to our progress, our recovery, and our peace. And it doesn't take a doctor or a scientist to tell us that we're products of our childhood. We all know that, and we've all had one. And they're just painted different colors. But those emotions, that survival mode that we speak of, you know, my trauma stems all the way back to abuse by my father. That's biggie. That's one, because to the forefront of the general public, they can't even bring that to a concept. It's so for those trauma survivors, you are very shut down, and your spidey sense, that she goes on fire right from the get-go, right out of the gate. So now as we grow and we go through these continued events and these continued traumas, all the goodness that comes with an abuse history that we're not aware of in our teens, our 20s, or we're making all these bad decisions, being the dirty mistress, doing all the things that we know in our gut, and we don't know why we're doing it. But it's a driving force, because she's saying, you need someone who loves you. You need someone, you know, go after them, go after them. And from that, I was also present for 9/11. I was in Manhattan and friends. And so you lump that on. And for me, in my journey, already using substances, you know, cocaine, alcohol, you name it, I could get my hands on it. And it was all to keep this down. That's all that was doing. This would start to bubble up, and I'd be like, nope, you got to go away. And 9/11, I believe, was the catalyst to very extreme alcoholism, like beyond belief. So I was an alcoholic for 30 years, and on May 1st, I will celebrate 4 years sober. So
Let's
when
stop
you're
for a
in,
second and celebrate that.
thank
That's
you.
massive.
I think it is too.
Yeah.
I really do. You know, sometimes I sit back and we'll get to this in a little bit, but just like, oh my God, I don't even think about it anymore. But that's comes with the getting rid of the dumpster fire. So, you know, 9/11, you kind of keep going. You're in your 20s, get married, and have I had my first son. Everything was fine. My second son, diagnosed with a rare disease, needed a stem cell transplant, had complications from the disease. He's doing fantastically, amazingly well. And then at 15, got type 1 diabetes as a direct correlation to the transplant. The dumpsters keep coming. We can't stop them. And it's that acceptance, that awareness of what's in our control and what is not. And that is the big aha moment, you know, I believe for trauma survivors, because we're in that bathtub filled with filth. We're scrubbing it all on, rubbing it in our hair, and we're comfortable there because that's what we know. That's what we know. And then when we realize, my biggest thing is if you think you deserve better, you do. You do. But the main point is looking at ourselves, meaning I cannot control what happened to me. I cannot control the towers falling. I cannot control rare disease. I cannot control any of that. But my actions and my behaviors and my choices, I can control, and I must take responsibility for those. I am not responsible for the things that happen, but I am responsible for every single thing I do. I can no longer point fingers. You know, and that is a habit when feeling defensive and alone and triggered nonstop, if you will. So and so made me drink. So and so made me upset. And when we get those things out and we kind of look at our role in them and we can start connecting the dots, that's where the peace comes. And, you know, I went to rehab twice. The second time, I had to just get on a plane and get out of Dodge. And I went out to Betty Ford, and my counselor at the time pulled out page 417 from the big book when I would go in there and be, ah, you know, my father, the towers, this and everything, and feeling those emotions. And we would get it out. And he would put down this card on acceptance. And he's like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? You tell me, what's your plan to change that? You're never going to get your day in the ring. They're dead. You know, this is not changeable, but this is. And that's the power that I look to help women primarily, but it's applicable to everybody, is the power's always been within us, and we are survivors. And we have, if you look at the laundry list of things that we have survived, we are a gajillion times stronger than we ever give ourselves credit for. But it's this. She's just rolling around because she's still stuck back there wanting a why. Why? There is no why. There is none. And it's that acceptance, that awareness that I cannot control that, but I can and I must, for survival, control this. And in looking at abuse patterns, generational patterns. While I was not doing the exact same thing to my children, my Tasmanian devil cyclone was damaging them just as much. And when I decided that I no longer wanted that path to go and went through, and when I tell you, so in my book, everything's in there. everything. And I love life because I don't ever have to look behind my shoulder anymore. You know what? I've told y'all. Because it happened. I handed my child when he swam the mile what I thought was a bottle of water, and it was a bottle of vodka. Not a good parenting moment. And begged him not to tattle on me to my husband at 13 years old. Oh, yeah, I was doing enough damage right then and there. And I didn't want to anymore. And it all boils down to us and what we want and what we believe that we deserve. And we all need somebody to engage in that verbal vomit, to just, no matter how, I mean, the beauty of me is I've been there, done there, that, said that, and thought that. You're not coming to the table with me with something that I'm going to be like, you know, and with the clinical background and understanding and really being able to take a good bird's eye view. And that's what you need. You need that outsider insight that isn't going to coddle. Yes, this shit is horrible. It's terrible. It sucks. Well, what are you going to do about it? And it boils down to being that simple. And we make things so much more complicated.
I agree with you there. You've mentioned so much, Sarah, that we can dig into. First of all, let's start with the 11 Shades of Meredith Grey. I love that you made me smile because, you know, Meredith is essentially that show, right? Like, but she's been through so much, and it's indicative of what we go through in life. Like, life is a drama. It's a drama.
I think we're starting to realize that this stuff that was fantasy, not so much fantasy, not so
No.
much real. It is. We're watching, my husband and I are watching The Pitt now, and I work in the hospital and in the emergency room. And he's like, "Oh my God, I feel like I'm listening to you." I'm like, "I told you this crap is real. You cannot make this stuff up."
Absolutely. And what I always find very interesting is when you are in those spaces, right? Like, it's your trauma on top of the trauma of the patients, on top of the immense stress that comes with the job, right? And you mentioned how, like, your hypervigilance started early because of the abuse that you endured. Like, my hypervigilance started early too. And it becomes this space where you end up overreacting. It's a trauma response because you are so sensitive to the stimuli around you and things that probably would not trigger somebody who has compounded trauma is the easiest trigger for someone who is. It could be as simple as the way someone sighs.
Smell. You know, I look at the parents in the children's hospital, and we have to go back and do you re those smells, the sounds, all of it, and you don't know when it's gonna hit. Like you're sitting there, and all the beeps and everything are going off, and then all of a sudden, something's going to hit. And that's what my coaching teaches is those strategies in those moments, because we don't know when they're gonna come. We don't know what's going to spark this. And when we're using substances to push it all down, because what we've done as women is we've stuffed everything in like our Spanx, and we think it's going to look gorgeous, but then we've got the boob fat that comes out, the back fat, your leg is numb because it's cut off the circulation. And we think in our minds we look fabulous, and it's ridiculous, and you can't breathe, and you're suffocating. So we're compounded with all of this, and when we're using substances to push it all down, when we clear our head, when we do that verbal vomit and make room, because to your point, you're heightened, and this perception is our reality, but it may not be reality. And until you talk that out, and one, sometimes hear how ridiculous contorted thoughts are. And that's it. It's all our thinking. It is all our thinking. And then if you look, you know, bigger, clearing this out then makes this healthier. I'm depressed, what am I doing? I'm laying on the couch and I'm eating chips, and then I get diabetes, and then I, it just cardiac, whatever. Overweight is a huge issue. And it just all starts with here. This is the most complex organ in the body, the least understood, and the most pushed away. And for me, I do ketamine therapy because those intrusive thoughts, and especially in sobriety, this is extremely helpful. The thoughts keep coming, and we can do all the self-talk and all the, that we want. We can't stop them. And so when you find that you're waking up and you want to kill 19 people and half of them are already dead and realize that's really not the way I want to start my day, I need to do something. And I literally looked at my husband and I said, if I had cancer, we would go to whatever facility and they'd pump me full of chemo, which is a poison, and try and get rid of the cancer. This is cancer of my brain and I can't manage it. And so you get sober and you work on all of this and you get kind of to a brick wall and there's a tiny little hole in the mortar and you look through and you see this gloriousness that you've worked so hard for. And like, I see you, but I can't get to you. So with the ketamine, where it breaks the synapses, creates new neural pathways, and it is a game changer. And I think I am very much for the holistic, but clearly I believe in medicine. My kid's a transplant kid and a diabetic. Yes, it's necessary, but there needs to be a joined effort, the integration of it, the constant practice of it. I was a star athlete, because that's never happening, but I would have to practice every t you know, if I wanted to be at that level, I have to put in the work. I have
Absolutely.
to put in the work. You know, I love to say, life is not a Jerry Maguire movie. Nobody's coming to complete us. Nobody.
Nobody. And we spend so much time searching for that when we're in survival mode,
Yes.
right?
Yes.
Everyone that comes into our lives is meant to complement, but if we don't do the work, it's like, let's fill this void with someone else.
Yes.
So the other thing that you mentioned was awareness and radical ownership, right? So I say the exit out of survival mode is three phases. First is awareness, second is reprogramming, and third is reinvention. And there is this aha moment that happens in healing and in exiting survival mode, choosing to take radical ownership of ourselves, that everything, just about everything that we believe is actually not really true. And
Right.
yes, and we conjure up these narratives that keep us feeling safe with the circumstances that we've been through, right? Which is why we end up at the bottom of a bottle or at the end of a Coke line or whatever it is,
Whatever
right?
it is, yep.
Because of the narratives that we're telling ourselves, which is why, first of all, the awareness is so important that, hey, the things that I'm feeding myself are not helping me, they're not serving me, but I also have to change the way that I think. I have to extinguish the
Yes.
dumpster fire that's going on
Fires.
in my brain. I
Yes.
have to change the way that I'm showing up, the way that I think, the way that I present myself as well.
Yes.
And it's such a journey. It's a very long journey because oftentimes we are rewriting decades of habits and patterns.
Yeah, and it's beyond decades. We're looking centuries. I mean, if we want to be women-centric, and we want to look at women's story, it is from the beginning of time. We all have been owned, traded, abused, a majority of us. And that goes back. I mean, you look at Elizabethan times, money didn't matter. You were groomed for another man, and all of this trauma, and it perpetuated. And I think we just changed the way it looked a little bit, but she's still there. We're still fighting.
We're still fighting because, there is this ignorance around how trauma shows up, right? Like somebody may be listening to this and saying, what the hell does the Elizabethan era have to do with me? But the reality is, if trauma goes unchecked, it is then passed down up to eight generations. And if the eighth generation isn't addressing that trauma, it's still getting passed on, right? And it's getting passed on. It is evolving because now we're picking up different traumas that come alongside the advancement of society. And we don't have, well, there are tools, but if we're not talking about this, if we're not being active in calling out what's happening, it just gets passed on. So I often, like, one of the examples that I've given before is I held on to my grandmother's version of poverty. I didn't live it, but it was passed on to my mother, and then it was passed on to me. And it was this, I didn't recognize that until I started my business. Now, something as simple as how you handle money, that's trauma. And a lot of people don't even aren't even aware of it, which is why these conversations are really, really important, right? Because some of us believe that we have to have like this big T trauma. You know, well, I wasn't abused. I haven't been raped. I haven't gone through this. I haven't gone through this. But we don't recognize the stories that we're holding on to that was something that happened to somebody 2 or 3 decades ago. We are carrying that. We are
We're carrying.
like living that, right? Because it's been passed on and it's been, we've been groomed or conditioned to believe something based on someone else's trauma, which is why it's so important, why this discussion around survival mode particularly is so important. Because I just, so many people are just walking through life with zero ownership. It's like life is happening and I'm here and I'll be here until I'm not. And woe is me.
Exactly. And I think, that's where you and I align beautifully because mine is awareness, accountability, and action. You can be aware and accountable all you want, but if you're not doing anything because you hit the nail on the head, we developed these fight, flight, and freeze, our survival skills at a very early age. And as adults, yes, they served us. They helped us survive. They were there for a reason. She did that for whatever reason it was. And then, but when we get this moment of clarity and we say, does that serve me anymore? Does that work in my life right now? No? All right, I got to shift that. And it's a mindset shift. And when we simplify it down, just, the who, what, when, and where, and just keep it in today, because I have no control over what's going to happen tomorrow.
Zero control.
And my biggest thing is looking myself in the eye. I do it in the mirror every day. And if my eyes dart on something that goes through my head, then that's something I need to hone in on. But it's a very telling practice.
That's interesting. So one of the things that I've enjoyed during my conversations is the alternative approach or modalities in healing. And ketamine has come up before, but it was in like a passing conversation with someone who had used mushrooms, and they're like, oh, you use ketamine, you use LSD. So let's talk a little bit about the ketamine therapy. What, first of all, why is it necessary? And why do you think this worked for you versus talk therapy?
I think we were all groomed those things, and therapy is vital. It is very valuable. But at times, does it continue the trauma? Are we re-traumatizing? Are we going back because we're dragging it out? And kind of just getting to the core is with with the coaching, not dancing around anymore. And so I've done those years, since 5 years old, done all the talk therapy, done all the stuff, got sober, continuing to do the work. And this is how I explain it to the physicians at the hospital, because I'm like the poster. I'll run around being like, because I don't care. I feel better, and that's the only thing that matters. And so, of course, their eyes go buggy. Who's the social worker doing this? I said, if my artery was blocked going to my heart, what is the cardiothoracic surgeon going to do? He's going to reroute the artery. Why do you think it's not possible in the brain? And it stops them in their tracks. Because again, we don't know. This is the most complex organ. They don't know anything about it. We are learning, but I think we need to see by the results, and it is not a pop a pill and you feel better. It's not meant to be that. And there's a lot of, you'll hear the controversy where, oh, Matthew Perry died from ketamine. No, my loves. Matthew Perry died from Matthew Perry. Ketamine was just the vehicle. And, I think we are, it's funny because, and especially in the United States, we are geared to be a sick community. We are marketed to be ill. If you feel a tickle in your nose, you might have rare disease A, B, C, and D. Go talk to your doctor about it. Go ask about it. Get on that medication. And then when you have the side effects from that medication, we got another medication over here. So I do not believe in that. That is ridiculous. But when it assists and it helps, because this, we're realizing that the brain is so powerful. It's getting its due acknowledgement, starting to. And I think the preface that humans understand how this all works, body and soul, is ludicrous. Stop it. Stop it. You don't. So when you're looking at the results and you're ready to do that work, you know what you have to put in, then it is an absolutely brilliant complement to coaching, to meditate, to personal well-being.
I think it's, excuse me, I think it's particularly powerful because oftentimes, you spoke about how powerful the brain is. One of the things it does is compartmentalize, right? So we can go through these extreme periods of stress and trauma and 10 years later completely forget about it because our body has like stuffed it. Our brain has packed it away. And I think that's why these alternatives to therapy are so important because I've heard, and even with my own experience, like when I wrote my memoir, having to go back to these places that when I talk about them now, it seems like I'm reincarnated and I'm telling you about a past life. But even in that process of writing and revisiting, I was remembering things that I didn't remember in my everyday life. It wasn't like I was sitting here like, oh, right, idea get molested at 7. Oh, right, idea go through this. So, like, I think that's why these alternatives are so key because, it unlocks that door that is keeping us stuck in the narratives that we don't necessarily have the root to often.
Right. And, in getting sober, we remove that security blanket, right? That's what's been keeping us safe. And then Pandora's box opens. And yes, addiction counseling and all of that stuff. But if we're not getting to the core, if we are not connecting those dots, because now I can be like, if I'm feeling a certain way and I'm like, oh, hold on, hold on. We know what that's related to, and that's not happening right now. So we don't need that that angst, we're okay. Let's put that down for right now. And it's that constant self-talk. I don't care if I look crazy on the street. You're like, cuckoo bird, nope, not doing that today. And owning it, you know, if I'm having a day and I walk into, people know, having a day, just because I own it. It's not their responsibility. It's not others' responsibility to not trigger me. That's mine, because it's my trigger, theirs. And I, again, you know, it goes back to that accountability and that ownership of it. If
Absolutely.
I'm upset, why am I upset? What is it about this that's upsetting me? Is it actually that person? Or is it something? And with how I coach, I do on concierge where you're in the moment, you're at work and someone's pissed you off, and it takes a 10-minute text, like, hey, I'm about to lose my mind on this person. All right, let's hop on a quick call. We use the methods that we're talking about, the strategies in real time, and you learn them rather than, oh, it's Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Today's my appointment, you know, or I have to hold on to that till my appointment. No, that doesn't work.
No, it has to be active. Like it has to be, right? Because oftentimes our trauma recovery is very similar to that of addiction, right? Like if we don't address the issues that we have, it then becomes attached to something else. Like oftentimes, as you know, you may stop drinking, but then you're, I don't know, having a ton of sex as a result, right? And that is without getting to the core of it. And like that's the key to healing. Like we can brush it off. We can say, yes, you know, now I recognize this is a trigger. But if we aren't then actively trying to rewrite the narrative, actively trying to change the
How
response to the
I'm
stimuli,
thinking about it, right?
yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's scary. It's very scary. But how I look at it is, here's this fire, right? And your dumpsters are rolling by. And all I'm doing is going, what does that do? That just spreads wildfire
Yeah, it just
and
spreads
creates
it.
more chaos.
Yes.
More chaos. Go like this. I know it's going to burn. I know it's going to burn. But once I do that,
The
what
fire's out.
happens? And we have survived all those other burns. We've already done it. And this one's for us.
Absolutely. Sarah, you have had me laughing.
I'm
Your
glad.
descriptions are just amazing. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. So
I
tell
did too.
us how we can connect with you online. Tell us how you work with clients. Tell us all the
Absolutely.
jazz.
Yes. So I work with clients one-on-one, like I said, a concierge coaching model, really intensive, and it can be a spread out, you know, but I find that that intensive, like, let's just get to it and bang it out. I wrote my first book called The Dumpster Fire Diaries, Get Off the Hot Mess Express. It is my story, but it's strategies that I used and use today to stay out of the dumpster fires. You know, left to my own accord, I'll light that bitch on fire in an instant, you know. And so thedumpsterfirediaries.com is my website. You can book a call with me, a free call, because you want to talk to somebody first. You don't want to be like, yeah, I'm going to work with you. I don't know you. I don't know you. So we have a conversation. That is what we need. We need conversations. And so they can book a call, they can purchase the book. There's a free clarity assessment tool on there called WTF. And it's taking that first step. Just go, reach out. This cannot hurt. And anything that I have available to you cannot harm you. It's available. But I need my women to reach out. Like, you know, we can't force anybody to do this. You have to take the first step. yourself.
Absolutely. And that is part of that radical ownership, making a decision that you want to change. So before we wrap it all up, Sarah, one last key takeaway for the audience.
That the fire does not define you. What you do next does.
Absolutely. What you do next, how you take action is what ultimately defines you. Thank you again, Sarah, for showing up. Thank you,
This
listeners,
was just
for
beautiful. I loved it.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, listeners, for listening once again. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not just built to survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.